We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 352. Scott, you still feeling it from Tuesday night? I woke up on Wednesday morning and I tweeted out that I felt hungover, and I legitimately felt hungover. I didn't drink a drop of alcohol on Tuesday night. I just watched that Yankees Twins game.
Yeah, I mean, I think I was up until it was probably 3:30 or so. It was one of those nights where I was I really didn't want to stay up late. You know, it was like I was trying not to. Like, you were doing the video for the post game. I'm like, all right, I have an opportunity to maybe catch some decent sleep. And no, it's like a 9-hour game. You're looking at this place that is playing like Camden Yards, even though it's a, you know, it's a relatively, by the dimensions, a pitcher-friendly park. It ain't playing like that. I don't know what's happening. If it's like, you know, the old Giant Stadium where they got fans coming in and pouring and pushing out towards center field, but holy crap, does the ball fly out of this place?
It's weird though, isn't it? Like, it almost doesn't feel like we're watching baseball, kind of like how we talked about with the London games, where it was, yes, my eyes are telling me baseball, but my brain is telling me something else. Like, this isn't, there's something quite wrong here, because every time there's a pitch in the strike zone that's semi-hittable and the ball goes in the air, it just keeps going and going and going and going and going. Oh, and it's upper deck.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. It's one of those, you know, but the other problem is when you're looking at this, it's like these guys don't want to be, they're trying to be so perfect and miss in the right spots that they are, they're missing being perfect and putting the ball over the zone or walking a ton of guys. I mean, we've seen a ridiculous amount of walks this year, I feel like. And I don't know. It's like the pitchers are trying to work around this juiced ball thing, because I think it's in everybody's head.
Definitely. I think that's what we saw Tuesday night, and we're going to talk about Monday's game too, obviously. We're just, heads up, recording during Wednesday's game. It is the fourth inning right now. The Yankees have a 6-3 lead. So if you hear any loud outbursts during the recording here, you'll know why. But yeah, I think you're totally right that, especially late in that game, no pitcher wanted to make a mistake. And then it was either a meatball down the middle because it's a mistake pitch, or it was nowhere close and you got walk after walk after walk.
Yeah, I mean, I'd like to say that was the reason why Chapman and Ottavino were going up there and throwing balls and just like not even. But it was really pissing me off. I mean, Chapman's been, yes, he was an all-star this year. Yes, you look at his numbers and he's been effective. But it does seem like every outing is an adventure. It's become that, you know, and especially when you can tell you can almost tell immediately. If he can't locate that fastball, then he starts throwing the slider over and over and over and over again. And you're just praying. You're praying that he could throw a ball over the plate, because when he's not on, it's tough sledding, man, trying to get out of an inning, especially one that's clean. Like, that just doesn't happen.
I don't know how he got out of there with one run to keep the game tied.
Just to keep us awake. I'm like, you know what? This is going to end. Can we just end? Just hurry up. Get it over with. Like, you know, rip the Band-Aid. Let's just do this.
But you saw Chapman sort of dial it back to 95 just to get it in the strike zone. And you're like, oh boy, that's not a good sign. And then he tries to pick a runner off at first base, which I don't know if I can recall him ever trying to make a pickoff move at first base. And I was like, this is clearly not Chapman's night. Here we go. We just had that dramatic Hicks home run, and it's going to be ripped out from under us again. And it was, kind of. And then it was almost kind of again. Air Hicks makes the game. There's just so much to break down in that game. That is one of those games that you could do an entire 3-hour-long podcast on. As I was watching it, didn't you get Dodgers-Astros World Series Game 5 vibes?
I had that thought more than I had the London thought, because there was no spectacle around this thing. That's not like we were expecting. Like, this was just like a wild, wild offensive game. And yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking, because that game was crazy. The fact that they were just going toe for toe, it was like a derby almost. Like, you know,
the momentum shifts, the lead changes, the Fangraphs leverage index was going around Twitter last night, And after the seventh inning, just the peaks and valleys for each team is wild. I wish I looked this up prior to recording, but there's an article that was written by like 538 or one of those nerd websites a while ago saying statistic probabilities of when you can safely leave a baseball game. Like after the sixth inning, if one team is up by X number of runs, you have a 93% chance of not seeing a comeback happen or blah, blah, blah. I would love to see, counterpoint last night's game.
I guess if anybody is consulting a website like that to make a decision based to either leave a game or stay in a game, you need to stop watching baseball right now. You need to stop watching baseball.
Well, do you blame people for leaving last night?
Yeah, I mean, it was 100 degrees on Saturday, and I didn't want to leave because I have problems leaving baseball games early. I don't like doing it.
Well, the people in the stadium left because apparently trains shut down, so they had to get home. That's understandable. But a lot of people shut the game off when the Yankees were getting their asses kicked in the middle of that game. Because you're saying that, first of all, it was a slow-paced game regardless. Yeah, it was a five-hour runtime because of the back and forth and the extra innings. But that was going to be like a four-hour, nine-inning game anyway.
It was a four-hour, nine-inning game. I actually have a I texted my brother because he's in Colorado. And so he's got 2 hours on me. And he was texting me about the game. I'm like, yeah, it's late as shit. It's been long. He's like, yeah, it is late on the East Coast. And that's when I looked at it at what was happening. But it was close to a four-hour game. Yankees are pouring it on right now. And Didi just slid in, head-first triple, cleared the bases, 9-3.
Didi's got some crazy stats at Target Field. They showed in his last at-bat after his double, it was something like 25 RBIs in like 12 games at Target Field. He had the 7 RBIs. Single-handedly kept them in that game early on. With,
there's no doubt about it. Talking about Didi too, like there's something. Obviously, he's been red hot during this Minnesota series. But something that was happening on Tuesday night, he started going the other way, and he hit that. There was a double, I think.
First inning double, yeah. Left center gap.
Yep.
Over the center fielder's head. Yeah, I mean he still pulls the home runs.
No, but I know. But he just hit a triple into the gap on the opposite side as well. So you're seeing, and what that means to me is that he's picking out his pitches. He's making he's intentionally, trying to use the entire field. And I think when he does that, he gets into that zone where he's seeing the ball better. That's when Didi's good. We talked about a few episodes ago about his walk rate and how he sees the ball. And when it's up there, obviously you start seeing better numbers because he's such a good hitter when the ball is over the plate. Like when he puts the ball in contact and when he makes contact and it's in play, he's got a high batting average. So it's so important for him to pick out his pitches and make sure he's doing it. But having the intention as well to go the other way just makes you such a more dangerous hitter. And I think he's using the whole field now. I love it.
And I don't want to say Didi's been bad this year. He came back from the injury and just never really got going. Now maybe he's starting to get going.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think it just took him a little bit. To get into the swing of things, and now we're seeing it.
He came back so fast; he barely did any rehab.
Right.
It was just like boom. Oh, Didi might be back soon. Oh no, Didi's back now. He's ready to go.
Didi's back. It's the timing of Didi. He needed to come back. I mean, you could be the biggest freak robot guy in the world and heal, faster than anybody, but that doesn't help you get into the groove of baseball, into the everyday grind. So it's good to see that, obviously, because we know what he does defensively, and when you have an offensive guy like that, especially a left-handed bat, in this lineup, it really makes it tough because you could put him in a bunch of different places and have a dangerous guy at the top to protect, or towards the middle, or wherever you want to slot him in as that lefty to break up some of these righties. Makes it that much more lethal.
So the crazy win on Tuesday, where do you put that as far as just nutso games, regular season games that you're going to remember forever? Because it's tough to say in the moment. We're less than 24 hours away from that game. But I really do think that is going to be one of those games we remember for a long time. Obviously, a lot depends on how the season ends. If they don't win a World Series, then you might remember it a little differently. But there's a lot of moments in this season that I think if the team wins a World Series, we're going to look back and say, wow, you remember that? That was such a great moment that helped them springboard. That's going to be, like JJ and Keith say on their podcast, the DVD moment.
I think it, so to me, it was a few years back. I think it was 17, right? Was the 9-2 Orioles deficit. Mm-hmm. It's similar to that game in the sense that
Starlin Castro goes down on Holiday, one knee to hit a home run.
Yep. Holiday, I think, tied the game, or it was before that Holiday.
Chase Ellsbury,
I think Ellsbury hit a home run in that game. But you know, that was one of those games that was kind of like it felt like a swing game. Like, I don't necessarily think this one felt like a swing game. I just think it was just an exciting game, and the fact that it happened. So that's the only difference. Like, it was a big game, there's no doubt, and it was fun to watch, although I hated watching the pitching. So there's another side of this too. Like, people,
do you want to call it pitching?
That's the thing. Like, I like seeing good pitching as well, and when I see just terrible pitching and then all the balls flying around, like, it's fun for a little bit, but at the same time you're like, Jesus Christ, can we get an out? Can we please stop them and get an out so we don't have to go up there and try to hit a home run to tie the game or whatever. It's memorable. To me, it's not up there with like some of the more memorable games. We'll see. I mean, ask me in 2 years.
The ending, maybe.
The ending. The catch by Hicks. Aaron Hicks was stupid.
Yeah, that is one of the best catches for the situation that I can remember that I've ever seen. It's not the best, just pure catch of all time, but for saving the game, it's a game saving catch. That is essentially a walk off catch.
Right. I tweeted that. I said, you know, when you take all the considerations into play, like the difficulty of the catch, the amount of ground that he covered, the angle in which he caught that ball because he had to cut it off and like reach across his body as well, plus the situation of the game itself, like I'd say it's arguably up there, top 10 all time catches. Like when you're looking at all of those,
we were talking about
factors.
That in our chats today, and there's just some freak catches, but they don't have the weight of the moment that Hicks play had.
Right.
So what do you want to say? What's more important? You know, I don't know. When you're just looking at highlights, maybe it's not more important, because if this is in the middle of a 10-minute long highlight video, and oh, Hicks dives and catches it, wow, that was cool. But like, you don't have the build up to the moment where the Yankees take their third lead since the eighth inning and are about to blow it again, and there's a missile up the gap, and somehow Aaron Hicks gets over there and dives and catches the freaking ball.
I don't know how he was closing that gap so fast, because that ball
fastest
was,
we have some Statcast numbers on it. He ran 74 feet,
yep.
27.4 feet per second, which was the fastest he's ran to a ball all season.
Okay. He
has PF flyers on.
When I'm watching him with my eyes, I see a ball that's tailing towards left field. So it's tailing towards the gap, right? Towards left field. And it was hit on a line. It was a rope. It was not a bloop that gave him time to get out there. Like, that ball was hit hard. And that dude was just Forrest Gump, like, trucking at the ball and made, you know, took the perfect angle, made the perfect dive. Everything was amazing about that play. That was obviously the perfect finish to that game, I think.
It's the only way a game like that could finish.
Yeah, you kind of have to, because the ball was still being hit. Even on the last out, the ball was being torched.
Yeah. Yeah. There's so much to unpack from it. It is a big moment. You said a few minutes ago, I think you said like springboard moment or something like that, where, you know, maybe this isn't a springboard moment because the Yankees don't need a springboard moment. If anything, Savages will be their springboard moment.
Exactly.
But what this did, the Twins are overachieving this year. They're a better team than anyone expected them to be. They're a much better offense than anyone expected them to be. They beat the crap out of your pitching on Monday night, and they beat the crap out of your pitching on Tuesday night. Your best starting pitcher got hit hard. Herman got hit hard against the Twins. So had the Twins won that game, then the Yankees are sitting there saying, well, this is a potential playoff matchup we're going to have in a couple months, and they're beating the crap out of our pitching. And they still beat the crap out of your pitching, but you won the game. So that takes a lot of the sting out of it.
Right, but when you run into somebody that's hot, we haven't played against their best pitcher.
Berrios.
And we're going to miss him this time. We missed him last time. And now if we do meet them in the playoffs, there's a good chance that we will see him for the first time in the playoffs. So, you know, It's the fact that they're hitting our pitching. It bothers me a lot. The fact that
they're hitting
everyone.
So they're hitting everyone.
The fact that they are so, because they are a really good offensive team. When you look at the guys on there, like Sano is back. Like he had an off year. I think he got, you know, there was an injury going on as well. He was fat. Now he's just like a mammoth.
That ball he hit off Britton was like, that thing was so loud.
Yeah.
That was, I know it was only like 440 feet or something like that, but it almost went through the stands.
But they, I mean, they have multiple guys that are just mashing the ball. And you put Nelson Cruz on any lineup, I feel like it seems like the entire team, you know, it just improves and gets that much better because the guy's been mashing. Nelson Cruz reminds me of Encarnacion, where these guys have both been just mashing the ball for years and years and years on like every team in the American League.
You know? Underrated, just great power hitters.
Yes. And they've played on a ton of teams, it seems like. I feel like they've both been
one of them's been popped for PEDs.
Yeah, Nelson Cruz.
And man, maybe Nelson Cruz has brought some of the good to Minnesota, and that's why everyone's hitting home runs.
Minnesota's looking for an edge. You know, they got a new ballpark, new manager.
Joe Mauer's gone.
Yeah, it's their moment. It's their line in the sand. You know, they had the changing of the guard, so now they got to do it. Rocco Baldelli's gone. People kept telling me I look like Rocco Baldelli.
No, they say you look like Shia LaBeouf.
I've heard that too, but I got a bunch of tweets yesterday saying Rocco Baldelli.
Well, nothing wrong with Rocco Baldelli, pride of Rhode Island. But at least one out of every three videos we post from the podcast, someone comments saying you look like, why is Shia LaBeouf talking about the Yankees?
It's the beard, because when there's no beard,
you got no one's ever said that. The same jaw. You have a similarly shaped jaw.
Nah, he does not have a jawline. He is a little bitch actor. Okay, let's get that straight. These guys, they may look all cool on the big screen, and then you meet them, they're like 5'3". I'm not 5'3".
Herman, 5'4". Herman, though, is concerning that he had absolutely nothing against a good offensive lineup. This is now his fourth start back from the injured list. He couldn't get out of the fourth inning, had absolutely no fastball command. I think Cone and Ruco were talking about at some point, only his changeup was the pitch that he could really rely on, and that's by far his third best pitch. It's his curveball and fastball. He's a curveball fastball guy, and he was relying on his changeup a lot. So many deep counts, so many foul balls, and Boone left him in. He was trusting him to get through that fourth inning somehow, and Sano just got him.
Yeah, I mean, that's 2 days in a row, really, that Boone has left starting pitchers in. Maybe a little too late. I mean, CeCe, who was on Monday, went four innings and gave up six earned, but seven runs in total. I think what were there, four home runs, three home runs, something like that.
Yeah, he allowed four home runs. I mean, you knew coming in they were going to be home runs,
right? But
Sabathia has allowed a lot of home runs. Herman's allowed a lot. Everyone's allowed a lot of home runs, but Happ especially has given up. Like, I saw a stat before the game. He ranks, where did it go? First in Major League Baseball's in home runs allowed, second in average launch angle, and third in fly ball rate. Like, that's just a recipe for a home run disaster.
And the funny thing about it is that he's, we're only in the fourth inning, but he's pitching the best of the other guy, keeping more guys in the park. As I say that, someone just hit a moonshot. Literally, as I said that. I think it was Marwin Gonzalez just hit an absolute moon ball. I'm not joking.
He gave up a home run to Rosario in the first inning.
Jesus
and then,
Christ. Literally. I mean, the words could
what's
not
going
have,
on? Okay, so what's going on?
The words like could I, not have the, come out of my mouth and then that home run be hit faster.
Juice balls, smooth balls, lower seams, aerodynamics, wind gusts. Like, what's going on? Because this is not normal.
I don't know. But J-Hap just left a 91-mile-an-hour meatball up in the zone. So that's what happened on that pitch.
I know it's been not normal all year. This is the highest home run rate per game of any season in baseball history. They've already surpassed like 2014's total of baseball. We're not even out of July. So it's unprecedented waters what we're doing for home runs. But this is I don't know if it's enjoyable. I mean, last night was fun. I had a hell of a lot of fun watching the game. And if you miss the game, that sucks for you. You probably feel better than me today, but that sucks for you that you missed such an emotional and fun game to watch. But this is, in general, not good baseball.
But for casual fans, do you think this is something that they want to watch? Because that's
last
so
night
the conspiracy
is,
theory
last night is, but last night is so rare. You normally just get 4-hour games where it's just a bunch of solo home runs and it's like 7-4. Like, that is not going to get casual fans to turn on the television.
But if you're going conspiracy theory on this whole thing, you could say that.
Oh, I am.
You could say that. You know, Major League Baseball, while they're touting the fact that games are too long and stuff, they're going to be like, well, you know what? We're going to juice the balls. We're going to make them small. And even though people were going to be talking about this, we're actually going to invite more home runs so that they can see that we're concerned about it. But in reality, we're going to get the ball out of the park more often, and we're going to increase the time of the games. Because that's what
you think
happening.
Baseball wants to increase times.
No, no,
time
no.
Of
I
games.
Said their narrative is saying don't. I want it shorter, right? I want the game mm-hmm. shorter. Let's talk about that. Let's talk about that. But let's throw juice balls out there because home runs are fun, and we know they're going to make longer games. But who cares? So I'm saying they're talking out of both sides of their mouth. But
I think
but they understand that baseball needs home runs because home runs sell tickets.
Baseball doesn't need home runs like this. We talked about this a few episodes ago. This is not. I don't think good baseball to watch.
But you know what it's doing? It's you start looking at some of the smaller market teams. You look at Minnesota. You look at some of these other teams that are out there. They're also hitting more home runs. Obviously, Minnesota's hitting more home runs. But you're seeing smaller market teams now who don't have the big dollars to spend on these big guys also hitting home runs. Does that not help individual franchises as well?
Well, it certainly helps individual franchises. You're talking about competing or bringing fans in? I guess that's one and the same.
A little of both, but yeah, but on a given day, I mean, you're seeing more balls fly to the ballpark for a bad team.
It's gonna eventually, I think it'll have a trickle-down effect to salary, player salary.
Oh, yeah, all this is going to trickle down at some point. It's all going
to
go bad.
I think they're going to start making slow changes to the ball, just like they made it making slow changes to the ball in 2015, which is where we are today. They're going to start to reel it back.
You mean over time?
Little by little.
Yeah, over time.
Over time. Yeah, it's not like we woke up in 2019 and the balls were juiced. The balls have been slowly being juiced since 2015.
It's been a slow juicing process.
It is a slow squeeze process. Little by little, they're squeezing that orange juice.
And it's the manufacturing process, right? So you're getting the manufacturing process. You're making tiny little tweaks to it. And then as time goes on, you're like, oh, damn, look at it for what it was 3 years ago. It's made a significant change over that span. But each year, the players don't notice it as much. But this year, I feel like this year more than any year, they've really talked about how the seam is really gone or not as prevalent.
Well, there's been studies done this year. There haven't been studies done in the past, but there was like the physics like professor that did a study for The Athletic on every single change in the ball and found legitimate changes backed by science. And then you have Rob Manfred there up on a podium saying, no, the baseball is the same as ever. We don't know what you're talking about.
I mean, someone's lying. Is it science or baseball? Baseball never lies.
Science never lies.
Baseball never lies. They're so honest.
But this series in general was big, and it looks like the Yankees are going to take 2 out of 3.
Oh, you don't say that. It's the fifth inning. It's the fourth inning.
You can edit that out if it comes back to bite me.
There is a lot of time left in this
the
game.
The Twins go into this series. This is a prove-me series for the Twins.
Yeah. Oh, I think this is one of those series that was circled. Like Baldelli.
Yes.
Doesn't like the Yankees, right? He had to deal with them when he was with Tampa forever.
He was also a Red Sox fan growing up.
Okay. And the Rhode Island people. And then you have the Minnesota Twins who have been just getting beat up by the New York Yankees forever. They've always been
something like 30. I think I saw something like 35-97 since like 2002 against the Yankees, including playoffs. Just complete big brother, little brother.
Yeah, but this is a very different team, right? Like, there's nobody on this team from your father's Twins. They're just these guys aren't there. So you have a bunch of players ready to go and say, you know what, we're wearing the uniform now. New transition. They got some young guys in there who are playing probably better than people expected. And yeah, they want to take down the big bad Yankees, especially the Yankees who have been in the news among national baseball pretty much for the past 2 weeks, 3 weeks. It feels like it's all been Yankees.
Right. So this is a prove it series, And they come out, win the first game, dominating Sabathia. Yankees leave 19 total players on base if you individually tally up the player left on base tally. But as a team, they went 2-for-12 with runners in scoring position. Encarnacion grounds into a triple play. Gary Sanchez grounds into a double play. Judge grounds into a double play. In this game, Hicks and Sanchez combined to go 0-for-10 with 5 strikeouts and 11 left on base.
That triple play, I mean, you couldn't have thrown it to him better, in a better spot. I mean, he was, the momentum coming in, just picked up the ball, stepped on third and threw it around the horn. Same thing with
The around the horn triple play is the most classic of the triple plays.
Yeah, and the same thing with the Gary Sanchez double play. Like, you know, these balls were hit hard right at them.
Sanchez is on the injured list, but Sanchez has hit into some bad luck in this series. I mean, yes. Two hits that he hit to the left side on Tuesday night, and the shortstop just made unbelievable plays.
Yep.
And the last one was the one he ended up injuring his groin on, but really bad luck for Sanchez. We have metrics on him, but do you realize I stumbled upon this? So he pulls his groin last night. The game is on July 23rd.
Yeah, this
is crazy.
He
pulls his groin running to first base. The Hustlegate game last year in Tampa was July 23rd.
Yeah, that's weird. That's a really weird coincidence.
That blew my mind.
I feel like, what was the other one that you found a while ago? It was the
Dustin Fowler.
Yeah. The Moonlight Graham thing.
Same day or something as Moonlight Graham or something like that. And yeah.
Although
I forgot about that.
Although yeah. I'm glad to see that Dustin Fowler has made it to the pros again and has played
for a while though,
in major league games. For a while, it was looking like
it was going to happen.
Right. Yeah, that was pretty wild. But no, that's crazy. And I need to I'm looking at my medical shingle on my wall right now because I gotta pat myself on the back a little bit. And people were giving me a little shit. I feel like you were being a little sarcastic on Twitter as well when I said, oh. Looks like he pulled up hyperextended quad. Everybody's like, no, it's the ankle.
I saw what I saw. When did I give you shit?
I don't know. But but that's what it looked like when he was running down the line and went past the bag.
Well, he turned an ankle.
Yeah, but I think the reason that he had the groin injury was probably because the ankle made him take a weird step. Afterwards.
Okay.
That's what really? It looked like. Because
but he looked like he was running awkwardly in the step and a half before first base. He took a little stutter step because he realized he wasn't going to, his strides were not
right
in line to hit the base.
Yeah, threw him off.
And then that threw him off. And then he rolls the ankle, I think, as his right foot is passing first base.
It touched the bag and kind of turned and rolled.
And then you could see him pull up and he was grimacing and stretching. He had a quote after the game. He said, it just feels a little tight. It's not preventing me from walking or moving my back freely, so I'm positive about that. But we've got to wait until tomorrow until we get the test done and see where it is.
His back? Is that what he said?
That's what he said. Huh. This definitely happened on the play. This is not an excuse for why he's been really, really struggling for a long time in a major slump. He's hitless in his last 19 at-bats, 10-for-85, which is a .118 average, 28 strikeouts over his last 21 games. Check out these splits. So, April, 980 OPS, monster. May, 979 OPS, monster. June, 824 OPS, very good player, all-star level, especially for a catcher. July, 358 OPS. That's like a pitcher. That's unheard of for someone of Gary Sanchez's level to have a 358 OPS. It's almost impossible to do for Gary Sanchez.
So they're saying that he's been healthy and all of this, but that's bullshit, right? I mean, that's complete bullshit. Someone doesn't fall off a cliff like that just because they're slumping and nothing's going
on.
So
you think for the last 21 games-ish, 85 plate appearances, at-bats, he's been dealing
with something? Goes back to London, doesn't it?
Why the hell, then, are they catching him so frequently? Did he not tell trainers?
Yeah, it could just be him, you know, trying to battle through something and just, you know, telling... you know, at this point, he's a veteran player who probably has a lot more rope with the way that he talks to trainers and does things. So yeah, I could see that. But I mean, look, you look at the numbers. The numbers are very telling. That's not a slump. That's falling off of a cliff. And when you're falling off a cliff like that, something's usually happening. You know, whether you're sore in a certain area and it's preventing you to do what you normally do. Or
he's not hitting the ball for power anymore. He's not slugging. His slugging percentage disappeared.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. Like it's huge. I mean, it's like 188 yeah. from 642 to 188.
Well, first of all, 642 is mental. To slug 642, that's bonkers.
But the difference is 188.
Yeah. And his chase percentage is up a few points. His ground ball percentage is up significantly.
Yep.
And his average exit velocity is down. This is kind of what happened last year. Sanchez, the more he hit the ball on the ground, the worse news it was for Gary Sanchez. Because he's slow as crap, and he's going to hit it into the shift.
So the fact that he pulled up with a groin injury, this is all soft tissue. There's a lot of things connected. You had talked about the fact that his back was okay, right? Like, that was interesting to me, that comment.
That's a quote from him.
I know, but that's an interesting comment because... So I've had these injuries. Like, that's why I feel like I know what he's talking about. When you have a groin injury, a lot of times that can affect the piriformis that goes into your back, and you get like back. It feels like a nerve in your lower back.
Piriformis.
All that is
a
connected.
Nerve or yeah. a muscle.
It's sciatica. Or a bone. It's sciatica. The sciatica nerve.
Oh. Sciatica.
Yeah, it's piriformis. So
I thought sciatica affects up through your hip, like the front of your thigh up through your hip.
It can, but it can also start in the groin. I've had it where it's gone down my...
I think I've had sciatica.
Where it's gone down my leg. Because when I was watching it live and I saw him pull up, I thought it was his quad. But the quad and the groin, like, that's all connected. All of that area is connected. And you just kind of hope it doesn't spread. But when you have a lower back injury as well, when you can't move your back as well, sometimes that nerve can get pinched because of inflammation. Look, you laugh the fact that I'm a freaking doctor, but I know what the hell I'm talking about with this stuff because I've had it. And that's exactly what it looked like.
Here you go again saying I'm laughing at you. I am asking legitimate questions. I'm interested in this information.
No, this is, I mean.
The people are interested in this information.
This is when I saw it pull up, and then and all of this is kind of making sense. Like, the power is going away dramatically, and it does limit you. And you can do things to make it feel better at certain times, but then it's one of the things that just keeps coming back until you can work it. And the only way to really, like, when I had it, I remember when I had it, I was playing baseball, and the only thing I could do was just not do anything. That was the only way it got away. I had to just stop.
If he has been dealing with any sort of nagging injuries, I have to imagine he did not tell the training staff, because they wouldn't have him catching as frequently as they have been.
And it's not like
he's been catching 4 out of 5 days pretty much.
Yeah.
For the entire season.
Well, and that's the thing. Like, it must not have been to a
more
point
than that, really.
It must not have been to a point where it was like, you know, noticeable on a where it was debilitating, but it's enough where it was
debilitating,
where it's taking debilitating, where it's taking out of
debilitating,
taking out away from his power. Like, that's I mean, it doesn't really take a lot, I think, for a major league player to lose some power and just like a little bit of slowness with the bat, and then your numbers completely drop.
That's a hell of a lot of power.
Yeah, it is. Just proves how much power he has, I think, when he's healthy.
That he's losing. Yeah, so he's on the injured list. The corresponding moves, they called up Higgy and Cortez, and Holder was also sent down. I believe, if you guys care, the Cortez move was for Sanchez, and the Higgy move was for Holder, just for some injury purposes to get Cortez back on the roster within 10 days.
Oh, because Sanchez went down with an injury, so that's why they get Cortez back up, I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, bookkeeping, baby. Got to have a good accountant right there.
Bookkeeping. The some other injury news. So Maben is rehabbing with Scranton right now, and this is interesting because Gardner hasn't played in 4 days.
Yeah, and Talkman's on fire.
Talkman is on fire. Whatever the hell Talkman did in Scranton before the London series, he's hitting .500 since he's been back up.
Dude, Scranton has been bringing guys back at a very good with very good thing. Like, Chad Green came back, was back to Chad Green. Talkman comes back. Talkman's a real baseball player. Frazier's murdering the ball down there, hitting home runs like every day.
He just needed that pep talk from Brian Cashman. Holder.
Hey, you gotta massage the you know, the ego a little bit with a guy like that. And he got it massaged, so now he's happy again.
Holder made his way back up, is now sent down. Yeah. He'll be back up soon. He struggled when he first went down to Scranton, but his last three outings were pretty dominant. 7 strikeouts and 5 2/3 innings with only 2 hits. Holder is a major league reliever. He's not a closer or eighth inning guy by any means, but he's a valuable reliever for this team that was just having a shit season, just like Chad Green was having a shit season, and he went down and figured it out.
Right. I mean, Jonathan Holder was really, he couldn't get anybody out either. I mean, it was pretty bad. They were pretty similar in the, when they got sent down, like it was almost a, it wasn't a choice. They had to go down. They couldn't stay.
Did you hear
the
quote that Jonathan Holder said? This was Chad Green asked about Jonathan Holder because of the situations was similar. And Chad Green said, after that game in Anaheim, I called my wife and said, I need to go down to the minors. I can't get anybody out here.
Yeah, I believe it. I mean, it was that bad. You could see with your own eyes. Mike Tauchman just hit a double and now has a double and a triple. And we are looking. We are on cycle alert for Mike Tauchman.
Oh boy, cycle talk. Mike Tauchman. The people have turned on Mike Tauchman. Turned in a good way. No one liked Mike Tauchman because
he couldn't play baseball.
Was preventing Clint Frazier from being in the majors.
And he was preventing Clint Frazier. Yep.
But now Mike Tauchman is providing value defensively, offensively, on the base paths, everywhere.
Now there's going to be a conversation of Brett Gardner or Mike Tauchman. And then you add Maben to this conversation. This is just there's a lot of people that want spots in that outfield. This just proves back to the depth conversation that we've had multiple times. Like the fact that this team has been put through so much adversity is just building them to be an absolute beast later in the season when they have, it doesn't matter who they have because everybody has performed and played meaningful games and has, a good amount of at-bats under their belt. And that doesn't happen very often. Usually when that happens, bad things are happening and your team is in shitty spot. But for whatever reason, somehow, they've won these games and now they're all going to, go into late in the season, ready to go, man. It's crazy. It's a wild season.
How many multi-hit Tauchman games are we away from dumb trade proposals centered around Mike Tauchman for starting pitching?
Oh, a lot. It's not enough time. There's not enough time before all that happens. Maybe off season Tauchman.
If he continues it, we didn't talk about the Twins trolling the Yankees playing New York, New York after they strike out. Yeah. What are your thoughts on that?
So I thought I was mishearing something. I was like, what? Do I have like another monitor on in my office? Like, what's happening? Why do I hear New York, New York? And yeah, they were trolling it. That's an interesting move.
That's big time trolling. You have to back that up.
So they play music all the time, right? Like they got a DJ like Tampa style. And,
sure.
And so now it's not just like, regular organ playing baseball stuff. Like they're playing music and stuff, like mm-hmm. all sorts of things loud. And New York, New York. I was like, is someone walking up to New York, New York? Nobody would do that, right?
Well, that would be a Twins player walking up.
Right. I was very confused when I heard it the first time. And so that's big time trolling. That should piss them off, right?
I bet it did. I bet it did piss them off.
Maybe they were making fun of Aaron Judge. I hope Judge took that personally, and then everybody else took it personally.
What do you mean?
Because of Judge in Boston with the boombox.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
You think Judge gets upset now when he hears that song?
No, I think that the players saw that they were trying to mock Aaron Judge. And they're like, you know what you're not going to do? Is mock Aaron Judge.
Whose idea is this in Twins? Is this like a PR stunt? Is this like the organist making this decision? Is this a Rocco Baldelli or like a GM decision?
I can see Baldelli making this decision. I can see Baldelli being sneaky.
I feel like this comes from the field. This comes from the clubhouse. This does not come from front office or marketing.
No. Front office is certainly not doing it. It's coming from someone had an idea. Someone had an idea about this, went to the right person, and they did it. I think Baldelli. Baldelli's a prime target, prime suspect in this.
Michael Pineda?
No, he's not that smart. I don't think he would have thought of that. I don't think he would have thought of that. Maybe Jake Cave. Jake Cave might do it. Jake Cave also another guy.
Be honest. Did you forget Jake Cave was on the Twins?
No, I actually knew. Only because I know he's from Hampton, Virginia, which is kind of close to where I went to school, so I knew that. But the he's friends with all these guys. He's friends
all the current guys.
He's friends with Judge. He went through the minor leagues with all of these guys, so he knows all of them too. So maybe it was Jake Cave trolling Judge. And it was just, you know, like a personal thing.
Oh, no, this is definitely a Rocco Baldelli sort of.
It could be Jake. Actually, now that more I'm thinking about it, it could be Jake Cave as well. Because Jake Cave has personal information. I don't think
Jake Cave has that kind of clout in that.
I think Jake Cave is friends with these guys. They have that. I remember when they were all coming up and Jake Cave and Judge had inside jokes with emojis on Instagram. There's definitely a bond there.
You think Jake Cave can get something like that done? I'm trying to think of an equivalent player.
No, but I'm saying Jake Cave could go to Baldelli and then they could conspire together and Baldelli could get it done, yeah.
All right. Well, I hope it pissed the Yankees off and I hope that was helping fuel them for their comeback win on Tuesday.
I think it did, maybe. There's another moon ball. Jesus Christ.
Who hit it?
Nelson Cruz.
Okay, so what's the score now? 9-7?
9-7, yep, off of Nestor Cortez.
I definitely didn't say this game was over. Sabathia's home run
splits.
Inning.
It's the bottom of the fifth inning. Oh, what time is it? It's 10:20, and so it's been 2 hours and 20 minutes. On pace for 5 hours again.
Sabathia's home run splits continue to be weird. Home, 45 innings, 2.60 ERA, 36 hits allowed, only 7 home runs allowed. Road, 41 innings pitched, 6.59 ERA, 49 hits, 15 home runs allowed by Sabathia on the road. This continues to be just odd.
These are really bad. Weird. These are really bad splits in the like to a point where you gotta start reconsidering when he's throwing. I mean, we know he wants extra rest. We know he needs extra rest. That's going to be a consideration, I think, at the deadline with them looking for another starting pitcher. Maybe it doesn't need to be a big flashy guy. Maybe there's two moves. Maybe there's a move for some guy that's going to be able to throw on the road for when CeCe's up. Because when you're looking at these numbers and you see they're significant. They're significantly worse, and about the same time, about the same amount of innings pitched, and you're looking at just a completely different pitcher on the road.
Yeah, we kind of theorized that maybe it's just discomfort on the road. Just he's doesn't like to travel anymore. It's his last season, all that kind of stuff. Maybe he's got to do more media when he's in these new cities. I know he was doing something with like a local Twins charity, a local Minnesota charity on Monday before his start.
His family's in Paris. Maybe he was thinking about that. They're all over Instagram.
Some baguettes.
Posting pictures of being in France, like the whole family without CeCe. He's probably bummed out about that pretty bad.
Oh, wee. He wants some baguettes.
He's just probably bummed out that he's not with his family. He's like, what am I doing? I'm in Minnesota. My family's in Paris. I'm giving up moonshots. Did you see the post game? He was just like, let me give the answers real quick so we can get out of here. It was like, I'm going to retire after this press conference. So I'm just going to give you whatever. I'm going to literally say nothing.
Take notes, Clint Frazier.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what he did. He went through the motions. That's exactly what it was.
You mentioned trade targets. So I was going through this on Twitter. The Giants are on a hot streak. Mm-hmm. They are above 500. They're now 2 games out of a wild card spot. They're one of the hottest teams in baseball. Are they really going to trade Madison Bumgarner?
No.
The Diamondbacks are tied with the Giants, 2 games out of a wild card spot. Are they really going to trade Robbie Ray or Zach Greinke?
I think so. They've already made public comments about it, actually. They've made public comments.
The Giants have made public comments about trading.
But the,
not necessarily Bumgarner. I mean, they have Bumgarner. They've addressed it because it's such a rumored thing. Bumgarner has his no trade clause, which he'd have to waive. But I don't see the Giants don't strike me as a team to sell when they think they might
not a franchise
have
guy
a
like
second half.
Not a franchise guy like Bumgarner in that point. Like the Diamondbacks are a different type of organization in the sense that like these guys are not, you know, they're not staple Diamondbacks, if that's a thing. But they've made comments about talking about the fact that, you know, we're in line for, or you know, we're going to compete for a second wild card spot. But does that put us over the top? I mean, we're a 500 team. Are we going to compete with the Dodgers? Are we going to really challenge them?
And, well, no, and I think these teams are not looking to challenge the Dodgers for the division. They're trying to outlast other wildcard teams and get into the one game.
No, I'm talking about for playoffs. Yeah, that's my point. What's the end game there? I understand that's not the division title.
Okay.
The end game is being in the playoffs, and are you even going to have a remote chance against a team like the Dodgers if you get to that point?
And, a playoff and series, I think, is worth it for.
If the answer is no, then you know you could significantly help. This is a situation that the Yankees were in 2016 when they decided to sell out. Like, they could have probably added a couple pieces and maybe tried to make a run.
What were they at that point? Do you remember?
I don't remember exactly where they were. I know they got better once they got rid of everybody and the kids came up. They actually made a push.
They certainly got more fun to watch.
They definitely got them. They made a push, or at least for a while. I think it faded, but they, you know, after Judge went down, but they made a push. The kids were up. So it's just one of those things as an organization, and it's not going to be a popular decision if you are selling. But at the same time, when you know that you're not going to compete for anything significant and you're just trying to get to the playoffs, like, is that it? Is that a successful season? I don't know. Depends on what these teams think. It depends on how they've sold the way that they're going to act, or how their fans, you know, receive something like that. Because I can tell you that the Yankees would be pissed off about that. Yankee fans would be mad as hell.
You're keeping the Diamondbacks pitchers in play.
Yeah.
Bauer, I think, is off the table. I don't think he was ever on the table. I don't think the Indians are trading anybody. So we're looking at the Diamondbacks guys, Matthew Boyd from the Tigers,
yep.
Mike Minor from the Rangers.
Tigers are loving all these medium teams, mediocre teams.
And their price tag was high to begin with. Mike Minor and Lance Lynn from the Rangers. Marcus Stroman, obviously, from the Blue Jays. So a couple articles on the website, very good breakdowns of both Boyd and Minor. Rohan wrote about Mike Minor today. Statcast data on him is very good. The one concerning thing with Mike Minor is his walk rate. He walks a lot of guys, but otherwise, he's got average to above average everything as far as Statcast goes. His ERA is very low, but if you don't want to look at ERA, peripheral stats are also good. He's going to cost less than Matthew Boyd as well, which is interesting. He's 31 years old. He's got another year of team control, but he's just not. The Tigers are asking for the moon for Matthew Boyd. Boyd's having also his best season ever. He ranks highly in all the peripheral stats. Sean wrote a great article breaking down his stuff. Sean loves this ERA called Sierra.
Yeah, I know. So I'm going off on it.
So I was not too familiar with this. Were you?
Come on. No, I was not.
Skill Interactive ERA.
Yep. Let's break this one down there.
The more I read about it, actually, the more I kind of like it. So the argument is ERA is not a good measurement for a pitcher. There's too many variables. It's too random. There's too much outside of the pitcher's control to just go on ERA. Okay, fine. So that's when FIP became more popular. Fielder Independent Pitching, right? Walks, strikeouts, home runs, hits, batters. Those are the things pitchers can control. What is their ERA based on those factors? But is it really fair to just throw out all balls in play? Right. Because if a guy hits a freaking missile up the middle and it's a base hit, he should be penalized for that. So Sierra blends the two together and it minimizes balls in play but still factors them in and comes up with an ERA factoring and everything. Couldn't even begin to tell you how it's calculated. Go Google it. MLB.com has an explanation of it. But I kind of like it, just the idea of blending the two ERAs together.
Yeah, no, I think it's interesting. I mean, I think Sean made some good points in kind of bringing it up and talking about it as well. And it's not a difficult thing to see why it could be valuable. But, you know, there's just when you start looking at a guy like Boyd and what he's going to cost, and then you look at, you know, is he hitting his stride at this point at 28 years old? Is he one of those guys like Corbin is what, 30, you know, but last year was age 29. Like I think we are seeing more of these guys starting to hit later in their 20s. And I don't think it's that uncommon anymore, but is he one of them? Is he that guy who's turning the corner, or is he just having, you know, putting together a season that looks really good? It's just the fact is that he's going to cost a ton, and when we're talking about a ton, it's going to be you're probably your top prospect. That's who they're asking for, and a player. So in our case, they'd be asking for Clint Frazier, right? First and foremost, they want a player that's going to be there for a while and a staple guy, and then they're looking at Garcia.
I would say, yeah,
that's who they're going to ask for. not to say that would be the final price that a team would give up, but that's who they're going after.
I think those are maybe if they don't want a player that they can play sooner, then it would be Florial and Garcia, plus other prospects. But yeah, definitely.
And I think when you're looking at Stroman, he's probably similar.
I don't know. Apparently, the Tigers GM is just a nutcase, and
yeah, but asked for the move. You ask for
that's why they didn't. That's why they never traded Fulmer,
right? Because
they were asking for
that worked out
at the
really
time, like Gleyber Torres or whatever.
But that's the thing. Like, so you're looking at what they're asking for, but I'm more talking about what it's actually going to cost, and I could see them being something similar because of Boyd's situation. I think is a little bit more attractive, but Stroman has more you know under his belt, obviously, and I think could probably theoretically help you more out in this year if you believe in a Marcus Stroman over Matthew Boyd.
Yeah, Boyd has been bad prior to this year, and
he's been bad recently too, right? We're having his like last five starts not been great.
So Sean talks about that in the article. You can find stats to say he's been bad recently. You can find stats say he's been good recently.
Yeah, that's the other problem with all these metrics. It's like, let's just put something else together and figure it out so that they look good. There's just too many.
I think more fans will trust Marcus Stroman. They'll be more satisfied
no doubt about
with
it
Marcus
they know
Stroman
who he is.
Trade. Yeah.
If you're looking at a fan, if we're looking at a fan confidence poll, everybody wants Stroman.
I'm not sure Stroman's the best pitcher available, though. I would obviously like Stroman. Stroman's going to give you better quality starts than CC Sabathia and Jay Happ right now.
Yeah, no, that's a real thing.
I mean, pretty much anyone is,
right?
So it's going to be
interesting. CC, he'll give you a better start on the road,
at home.
No, he'll give you a better start on the road than CC. CC might duel him at home.
So if they acquire, like you said, if they acquire a Boyd or Minor plus someone secondary to plug into the rotation for depth, I could see that happening.
You just got a lot of bodies at that point, though. You have a lot of bodies to figure out and to see what they're going to do. I mean, you still have roster decisions at that point.
They did it last year. They got Jay Happ and Lance Lynn.
Yeah, they did. They did.
And Zach Britton.
And who knows what's going to happen with Severino and with Patantis. Then you still have two more bodies that are coming back potentially. So there's going to be some juggling going on. Again, I still believe that Cashman is going after best value, best arm, not necessarily looking at, if they are a starter or a reliever at the end of the day. Like, I do think he wants a starting pitcher, but I think I don't think he's going to go out there and overpay for it. Not to the extent where he's given up a top prospect and Clint Frazier. I don't think it's going to happen.
We're less than a week away, as people are listening to this, from the trade deadline. When do we start seeing movement? When do we start seeing that first domino fall?
I would imagine it. I actually think a lot of this is going to go pretty close to the deadline because August doesn't matter anymore.
Clear your 3 p.m. to 4 p.m.
No,
schedule
it,
on
it really
July
is.
31st.
I think there's going to be, first of all, like when the market maker comes out, whenever that is, that's when you'll start seeing dominoes fall. So it's at this point, they're a game of chicken or, who's going to play first or someone comes in with a crazy offer for a Stroman or whomever the first guy is to drop. And then all of a sudden, you're going to start seeing moves being made because nobody wants to be left in the dust.
I think one of the Texas pitchers gets moved first. I think 2-8 in their last 10.
Yeah. I mean, if he has the deal he wants, that's the thing. Like, they all know he's going to sell too. So he's in a point where he's going to probably get a ton of offers.
If you're a general manager, you have to walk the tightrope of, do I sell now? I'm trying to think what I'm saying. You can trade too early or you could trade too late, because if you hang on to your guy too long and other teams get pitchers, then you have no one to trade to. The Tigers are in a situation, they don't need to trade Matthew Boyd this year.
Right.
He's under team control through 2022. They're going to suck next year. They can trade him next year.
Yeah.
Mike Minor is going to be next year, the only reason Mike Minor really has good value is because you have him for this year plus next year.
Right. You're looking at him next year for them, and it's not an attractive offer because then he's not controllable any longer. He's essentially a rental unless you're getting rid of him in the offseason.
And who's to say he's going to have this kind of season again? Who's to say Boyd's going to have this kind of season again? But at least the Tigers can sell Matthew Boyd's good 2019 and team control if he's having a so-so year next year.
Yeah.
So the Rangers, I think we're going to see Rangers trade first.
Yeah, I could. I mean, it's very possible. And then, I mean, they do have other assets they are going to be moving around too. Hunter Pence is on the team. I'm talking about position players. I think they're getting a lot of calls right now to, there could be a package deal of a guy like Pence. I was listening to, I forget who it was talking about this. Someone on the radio was talking about a deal of Minor and Pence to Tampa. Fills a back end rotation spot, middle of the rotation spot, and a righty bat that would fill in on that lineup and make them a more formidable team to compete. So you can see some of these package deals going together, and I think Texas has probably a good a shot as anybody.
The Twins, I think, are going to get bullpen help too.
I think so too. I think they obviously need to focus on pitching. The Twins and the Yankees are going after the same people probably.
Yeah.
So now Brian Cashman's looking over there and like, I'm not going to let the Twins win trade deadline. That's for
and
sure.
If you're,
I'm going to own them in the trade deadline too.
Say you're the Blue Jays and you're getting calls from the Twins and the Yankees.
Yeah, you might, that's leverage, baby.
Yeah, they're going to probably rather trade though to the Twins than the Yankees.
Right. So butter me up, give me something extra so I don't have to go to the Yankees, because I will. But give me something extra.
It's just such a waiting game because we know the Yankees are good. We know the Yankees are in a position to win this division. But it's just this trade deadline. It just seems like it's still at fingertip length, and it's just almost here. I just want to know what happens at this point.
Yeah, I'm excited for it. I think there's going to be some really interesting things. It's funny because all the guys that we're looking at, besides Stroman, because he's really the one. I think. I mean, you look at Minor and Boyd. Like, are they needle movers? I don't think so. I don't think they're gonna. Unless one of these guys come in and pitches like crazy hot. But when you're
both
talking
the guys who wrote on our website today say they're better than Stroman.
Fine, but when you're talking about I'm talking about fan confidence type thing, when you're looking at a team making a big splash, you know what I mean? And like getting everybody pumped up. Like, it doesn't seem like it's really there unless the Giants were to, get rid of or decide that they were gonna sell, or for whatever reason Cleveland, like, people have been talking about them selling their pitchers for probably a year now. But they haven't sold one.
Cleveland's not going to sell. They're in a wild card. But they're in the playoffs. How do you sell that to your fan base?
You don't.
Yes, we're in a playoff. We're in the playoffs but we're selling.
That was the whole narrative in the offseason. Like, how are you? Why are you talking about selling? You guys are good. You have a good team. They're poor is what they are. They need money.
Giants,
they need money. Please,
the Giants,
sir?
On the other hand, are playing out of their minds. They're not this good. So there's a week left. If they go 500 over this week, they might say, okay, we are not this good. It's time to sell. They pretty much have to keep this unbelievable pace up through the trade deadline, I think, for them in order to not sell.
Yeah, and there's other teams. Like, the other thing we weren't really talking about just the Twins and the Yankees, but the Braves are looking for starting pitching. The Phillies are looking for starting pitching, probably bullpen help too. Like, there's a lot of teams that are going to be, either in a competitive or in a playoff spot or competing for a playoff spot that are buyers, everybody's looking for pitching pretty much. Like, a couple bats, but we don't really care about that. The pitching market, because what it is, and because some of these guys might not be available, it's going to be super competitive. Not just the American League, it's going to be competitive throughout baseball. So that's why I'm still believing that Cashman's really just looking for value at this point. And looking for some more, or just depth and quality arms. I still circle, man. Robbie Ray is that guy that just has the. He's kind of like a hybrid. He could come in relief if you needed him to. Down the stretch, you could have him start a game. He doesn't really go deep into games. High strikeout rate. I know he walks some guys too, but it seems like he fits his team.
After the Twin Series, the Yankees are going to go to Boston for the first time this year. They're 6-1 against the Red Sox. They've outscored them 56-36. The pitching matchups quickly are all set. Tanaka Porcello, Paxton Kashner, Sabathia Rodriguez, and Germán Sale to finish off the four-game series at Fenway. Did you see what happened between the Rays and the Red Sox today with this switch nonsense where they put the relief pitcher at first base? There was like a 20-minute delay on the field. No one knew what the hell was going on. Angel Hernandez, of course, was in the middle of all of it. Now Alex Cora is protesting the game.
I saw something about it, but I did not get into it to see exactly what happened. So can you give me a synopsis of what exactly happened?
The synopsis is it was the eighth inning. Kevin Cash had a relief pitcher in the game. He was a lefty.
Yeah.
He faced one batter.
Right.
Then
is it McKay?
No, it begins with a K. I forget his name. Then he puts him at first base, brings in another relief pitcher, but then Devers is coming up after that, and he wanted the guy to face Devers. So then he takes him out of first base, brings him back to the pitcher mound, brings in a new first baseman, but they lose the DH.
Right.
The whole confusion was, where does the pitcher bat?
Okay.
That was the whole confusion. I was just reading an article on MLB.com. Apparently, Kevin Cash didn't say where he's going to hit, which means it's up to the umpire where he's going to hit. And the umpire didn't designate where he's going to hit. So Alex Cora wanted to know what the hell is going on. All of that was a 20-minute delay, and then Devers grounded out on the first pitch.
I mean, I like the move. It's very Tampa Bay.
Apparently he's done it already this year before.
It's very Tampa Bay. It's also very, like, you know, adult baseball league.
Do you remember when Brian Cashman did it with Brian Mitchell?
Yep.
I mean, not Brian Cashman. Joe Girardi did it with Brian Mitchell.
Yeah. No, it's one of those moves that it saves a roster spot, baby. It saves a guy on the bench.
It's not going to be able to be done next year.
Got to get rid of that. It also takes too much goddamn time because it's confusing. Not a good look for baseball.
20 minutes of, they just find new ways to delay games in Tampa, whether it's no power, whether it's just catwalks or just stops in the game. Still going to finish quicker than the Yankees and Twins game, even if there's a 20-minute delay. No problem about that. But biggest two-week stretch for the Red Sox of their season. They're playing Tampa Yankees, Tampa Yankees.
Yeah, it's huge for them. It's also, Tampa's in a really bad spot, actually, because they kind of need the Red Sox to win, but they also need to win. That's what I was saying last show. They need to be ambulance chasers. They need to draft them, essentially.
They need the Red Sox to beat up on the Yankees, but they need to match them.
Right. Yeah. They got to win. So yeah, the fact that they're playing, the Red Sox too is
they just lost 2 out of 3.
Not good for them. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
They raised it.
Look, I am not going to be surprised, and I don't think anybody should be surprised if the Red Sox make a late season tear. And all of a sudden we look down or, you know, at the standings and they're 5 games out, you know, something like that. And there's going to be, you know, a lot more pressure, especially if these injuries just continue to happen, because it doesn't look like they're stopping. It doesn't look like we've been put in the good graces of the baseball gods yet, because
they got put on hold for a little while.
Yeah. Because, you know, one guy comes back, another guy goes. And it's just, we had, like, I don't know, 3 weeks where it felt like injuries weren't really as much of a thing, even though Stanton wasn't on the team. I feel like people forget that still. But now that Sanchez is out, and he's going to be out for a while, man. He's going to be out till maybe September.
Oh, okay. Great.
That wouldn't surprise me. It would not surprise me.
Of course. Nothing this year will surprise me.
He's got weak groins. He's got UI groins.
Oh, boy. Poor Gary. He's UI. He's UI in the groin area. All right. That's going to do it for this show. It has been a long week of baseball, and it's about to get longer because what inning are we in? Like the fifth inning right now?
All I know is that there's a pitcher for the Twins wearing Aaron Hicks's number, wearing stirrups, like old school stirrups, and it's 9-7 in the top of the seventh inning, and this guy's also wearing rec specs. This guy's all sorts of something.
Okay, beautiful. We will talk to you guys on Sunday for we're going to talk to you on Monday. We're going to record on Sunday. For that show, send in your mailbag questions. It's going to be a big weekend with the Red Sox. Send in mailbag questions to bronxpinstripes.com/podcast. Tweet us at Yankees Podcast or put them in the Facebook group. We want to hear from you guys. Ask a question. Give a hot take. Yell about the game from Tuesday night if you're still excited about it. Last word, Scott.
Yeah, we're going through all the intern emails and such, so we're going to be emailing you guys back probably this week at some point. And if you do not hear back from us, don't take it personally. We appreciate you sending it in, but just probably kick it back to every single person. Yeah, but we do appreciate it, and keep going and keep chasing your dreams.
Wow, that was such a nice way to end the show.
Hey guys, thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.